The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
Welcome back to part two of the Hearth Tales interview with Jamie Howell. Sometimes you get into a conversation or an interview and you just need to let it flow, and it feels wrong to compress it into half an hour. And this is one of those conversations. In this part of the interview, Jamie talks about hope and overwhelm and good ancestry and the village, and there's a rather entertaining piece that he wrote in response to a letter from David Seymour, which I think is well worth a listen, and I certainly didn't want to cut that out with the last show. So hopefully this finds you well. If you have anybody that you feel would be a good interview that works in the creative industries or around the creative industries, please give me a shout. I'd love to talk to them. And that can be musicians, artists, gallery owners, arts workers, arts therapists, anybody who you feel might have a story to tell, or even if you feel you might have a good story to tell, I'd certainly be really interested to hear from you. It saves me a lot of work finding, although there are so many good people in this area, but it certainly saves me a lot of work. So, until next time, enjoy, and welcome back, Jamie. To you, is hope an emotion, or is it discipline?
Yeah, in one sense, hope is something that comes like a warm zephyr. In other words, I do nothing to earn it, but like an act of grace, it's just like there'll be a flavour of hope comes through. But that's not really it for me. I guess hope, Joanna Macy coined a phrase, active hope. So there's something about that, about participation and agency, about creating hope. It's an edge, isn't it? Mm. In times like this with what's happening in America. I heard the other day, you know, the top 12 wealthiest people in the world own as much wealth accumulated as 4 billion others. Yeah. And you want to talk about hope.
Mm.
Meanwhile, we're in the midst of the sixth mass extinction. And we want to talk about hope. So how does it live in me? Yeah, I guess that's... I have to really work.
Mm.
I have to really work. I have to counteract the seductions and the addiction to mass media and consciously draw myself closer to these people who are manifesting wisdom and beautiful things in the world, and choose to hang out with them and choose to yoke my mind with those things. So again, the music, again, the truth tellers. I saw this wonderful thing, I'd love to share it. It was just a small piece, this New Zealand people had done, they'd made an advert. It was about, I think it's Bathurst wanting to invest in a mining operation in Aotearoa, and this couple local to this region actually had come up with this interview, and it was about ANZ Bank because they were funding Bathurst, and they managed to basically embody the role of the artist who tells the truth.
Wonderful.
And the more people who are willing to tell the truth, and the more people who can use art, because no matter how intelligent artificial intelligence is and how much money you can do on political smear campaigns and lobbying, isn't it great that when you see a beautiful piece of art or theatre that tells the truth, it goes straight to it and we know.
Yeah.
Boom. So that gives me hope.
Good.
But I was saying to my partner, that's just the first part, is the fact that the artists do that. The second part is grabbing the moment and actually making choices. So, yeah.
In some ways, that kind of answers my next question, in as much as if somebody came up to you and said, look, I'm feeling really overwhelmed with the state of the world, do I retreat or do I move forward? What do I do with my life?
It really depends on that and the life stage of the person who's coming forward. I think there's different answers. If that was a teenager, then I'd be wanting to wrap them up and get them involved in the rites of passage community and help them know that mainstream education is one way of seeing this and there are others. And if that was a young adult age, 18 to 45, it would be a different answer again. And if it was an adult in their midlife, it would be a different story again. Unless there's another section of people, I want you to ask the question one more time, but if there's another section of people where I think it's really interesting, and these are what we could call the difference between olders and elders.
Mm-hmm.
And the latter, elders, are the ones who have managed to stay awake, matured their psyche into the fact that beyond being self-centered and are now standing in a place of service to life. And I don't mean to be harsh or judge the olders, but I think there's a lot of people in the older age brackets who possibly are feeling quite lost. And I think it's a sad state of affairs that we push them out into these periphery of society, into these aging home care. And the thing that brings me alive so much is when we've had the elders involved in the educational programs that the Center for the Great Turning is running, and seeing these elders who have got so much life experience coming alive. And there's this beautiful interaction between the young people who just are hungry to be seen by the elders, and the elders are hungry to be seen and by the young people. Yeah. So it's like these things go together. Just ask me your question one more time.
Though. Okay. Given somebody may come to you feeling great overwhelm at the largest systems in life, and they present to you the quandary as to whether to step forward or to step back into retreat, where would you take them on that trip? Where would you advise them to go?
Stand still. Don't step forward, don't step back, stand still. The trees and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. It's a poem by David Wagner. But I think the truth in that is so important. Stand still. Learn to self-regulate. Learn the skill that's not been taught so much in schools, to be able to bring your body to a halt, to be able to rest the mind in this kind of ever-fresh awareness. So we're really talking about how to regulate our nervous system, how to meet ourselves with more kindness, how to become more aware of all the supports that are available to us that mean that we can, if you imagine our minds and our hearts and our nervous systems are like a jar full of, well, you can use whatever you would. You could have glitter or you could have a more organic material, mud. And we just need to slow down, get off the tech long enough to be able to access our own inner clarity. And then rather than somebody else saying, oh, go back, retreat or go forward, trust that the clarity to know what to do will come from yourself. But in the absence of that, then we need to find kin. We need to find our tribe and our village for some support. I found great use in a commitment to periodic retreat. It's not really retreat though. Retreat's just a name where we step out of society and go to a place in the woods with a group of people or in nature and spend a week out. I think there's huge value in that. I don't know what step forward really means. I feel reluctant. You got to know a little bit about who you are and what your capacity is before going forward, I think.
If you do step out into the bush, leave your Walkmans and your noisy ghetto blasters or whatever they call them these days, and you're out of your mind. So this is probably like the shortest question that I have, but potentially one of the biggest ones. What kind of ancestor do you want to be?
I guess the best I could be would be someone who used his life to say the buck stopped here.
Mm.
The ancestral trauma, the inheritance of my father's, the generations, and I think there's generational wounding there of war and not able to attune to emotions, and to be able to have used this life to have met that head on, heart on, heart, and I don't know if it's too ambitious to say it, but yeah, to have made a peace with that,
mm-hmm.
so that the psyche, if I assume that we pass on an inheritance to our children, that wounding stops here,
mm.
and the inheritance that I pass on is a story. I mean, let's get to the chase of it, because mm-hmm. you said it's the most. We are here to love each other.
Mm-hmm.
We are here to love each other. Well, so the best answer I could be would be to do that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's easier, possibly, to love our partners. It's easiest to love my dog. easier to love my kin, my blood, my daughter. Much harder to love the people who bring up my, who aggravate my wounded child.
Mm.
But really, you know, that's, yeah. If I could choose that more often, and I think because my life is about education, the ancestor who was a part of founding a center for the Great Turning was the one, was a part of a people who recognized the wisdom that lives in a village,
mm.
and created a mode of education. We were talking about your children,
mm.
that where children get brought up, they never lose their connection to being in the wilderness. They mm. never lose it. You don't have to worry about eco-awakening later down the track, because they never lost it.
Mm.
And they, like we said at the start, these children still, they belong to the earth, and they know they do, deep down. What a legacy, what a thing mm. for our, and for that institution, the Center for the Great Turning, that charitable trust, to become a seed, an embryo of other types of education, because we know I'm not alone.
Mm-mm.
There are families and parents out there craving, wanting their children to be brought up in a way closer to nature, closer to their authenticity.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, just the other morning, we dropped one of our twins off at the forest school, and he whispered in my partner's ear, "Mum, can you ask her to teach me how to talk to the birds?" And that was based on a story we'd just told the night before, and that's alive in his heart, the possibility of being so utterly connected to nature that they can have hold a conversation mm-hmm. with nature at 5 mm. coming on 6. I think it's really important to keep that alive. Yeah.
Yeah, let me just jump back. Maybe we're coming to a close, but... You asked about the Vision Fest.
Mm.
I think that's probably it. I just didn't want. Yeah. I felt hesitant to say it, for what people may make of it. But there is a conversation out there mm. between the land and the human psyche. Mm. I think Te Ao Māori mm-hmm. know this. The elders know this, and we go out on that Vision Fest. We can't crave it, because that would distort it. You can't. But there are moments of grace that conversation, whether it's bird, tree, mycelium, sky,
mm-hmm.
whether it's weka, a creature that comes in. But yeah, it's some rebuilding of our capacity to feel the world, the earth, almost speak through us.
Yeah.
I don't know how that lands, but and that's what I mean about coming in alignment to our purpose.
I've often toyed with the idea of doing a very similar thing, but with captains of industry. Mm. Take them out of the boardrooms, make them work together, and put them through an experience and an awakening like this, and then see if there's a way to measure how they operate within their corporations and within the corporation interfaces with the world post an experience like this. Mm. Does it change them? Does it make the world a better place? I would argue it potentially will, but it's unproven. But to focus that on those good people.
It has. I think I'll be brave and say it undoubtedly would inevitably change the way it is, because you couldn't. Yeah, if human beings have that kind of experience where they come in contact with their ecological soul, this voice inside of them, this intuition of wholeness, and then it'd be so powerful in a way that you'd go back into that boardroom or back into that industrial, you know, that it's almost like a complex, and it'd be like, wow, you've got a dilemma now. You're going to listen to what you've been tapped into the source in the like of this real conversation, an authentic conversation, and then you start to see all of the, you know, you would become clear the ethics of our actions, and every conversation with a human that was either inauthentic or, you know, you'd become attuned to your gut instinct. So yeah, I think it would change. I think it would change a lot, and I do believe that this work is happening. It's just that we don't hear about it. Mm. It's not in the mass. It doesn't make you see. Media thrives on stimulating our nervous system in a way, that addictive quality of flight, fight, and fear, and all of that stuff. So that's. Wouldn't it be lovely to imagine that more stories come out of these CEOs and leaders, people who do have a power in the wealth, in the sense of money, and to be having these transformations and then restructuring their organisms, I nearly said organizations, in a way that was in alignment to the vision that they were seeing. And I mean, that's the dream, really, I think, isn't it? Yeah. Because you can have both. It's not like just becoming a hippie. I think you can have productivity and you can have ecological harmony and vision. Mm-hmm. And I think, and you can also begin to remove the hierarchies. This is the underbelly of power, and be working more in a kind of level circle, flat way of counsel. And every one of us is heir to creativity. Mm-hmm. And I imagine the biggest commodity that we humans have actually is our creativity. So if you want people connected to their creativity, you've got to be connected to your authentic self.
And what's next for you?
I'm dreaming of some land to for the Centre for the Great Turning, really, that we could establish a property and where people can come, and to do it in such a way that we make it accessible. So not less of this, you know, expensive thing to come on retreat. It's already hard enough to say yes to come on retreat, because the psyche gives you all of this resistance. So you've got to cross that, and then you get through that resistance. You have this bright moment of clarity where the stars burn through the sheets of clarity. You say, yes, I'm going to do this. And then you've got to pay for it. And then it's like, oh, and you think of all the things you could do with that money. And I'm particularly interested in young adults, and they don't have a lot of money. I mean, this is a generation, and we're not going to own property and home, so I want it to be accessible. So if we actually own the land and had philanthropy make that so, that's the dream, then we could make the courses so much more accessible. Yeah. And I think that would be, that's it. So that's one part. And the other is, I want to further the power of the artistry. I'm exploring being it's actually just coming through me, probably through the Vision Fest, is like being a poet and playing music. And I would love, I'm going to do this. I'm going to let this be a statement out loud of I want to deepen into this artistry of poetry, of truth telling through poetry. Yeah, if you're open, I've just finished one poem, and I know a few lines of it. If you want to hear it, Is this show political? Can I...
It can be as political as you need it to be.
All right, okay. Well, interestingly, it's an election year coming up, and you may choose to edit this out or not. But anyway, David Seymour wrote me a note. He sent me a letter. It came to our family through our mailing box, and my whole heart started beating because I thought, wow, he's actually, by sending me a letter, he's inviting me into a conversation. But I don't really have the means to reply to him, and would he listen to me anyway? So I wrote this poem. I don't know how much I'm going to remember. You, the listener, you got to imagine I'm sitting in Richie's bus here. I don't have any notes in front of me, but let's see what happens. So this was my reply to David Seymour. I said, you know, most adults never grow up. Caught in the rub between amnesia and anesthesia's cup. A plaining sight, forgetting a numbing of soul. We marry, raise children, make money the goal. Meanwhile, inside, frightened children learn to protect their timid hands of innocence, neglected, subjected to the busy minds that didn't even know they're rejected. A soul song, a web unspun. The promise of modernity is coming undone. We stand on a threshold now, these adult bodies in adolescent vows, clinging to the delusion of endless growth while the species leave and our far children choke. Fast track this with this political brimming, this ignorance greed of unexamined living. Meanwhile, billions are sitting in samadhi, linking. The wildness returns, adds body to thinking, legs to roam, eyes to the seeing, surrendering deep into this interbeing, unfolding roots, unfolding wings, establishing roots, new ways take hold, dive deep, weave roots. A widening, deepening consciousness brings, it is the song of dark, heavy things, generations of wounding coming to the table, it's a place for the elders, the ancestors enable. Healing begins when we finally sense that the force that unites us is more immense than the fractions and the fictions and the divides we defend. We'll live together as kin, or we'll die in the end. I could say more, but maybe I'll pause it.
This is not the first time I've heard it, but it's always a pleasure to hear that.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll hear this.
Maybe he will. There's a couple more verses in there, but it's basically, it's an invitation. At the end, I said, there's this line, it's like, well, fast track this. Why don't we all take a pause? In a way, it's just a powerful invitation. I actually want to say, David, we're actually quite the same age. Why don't we take off our personas, take off our hats and our images, and why don't we all take a pause and sit together in the acknowledgement that this, we are the cresting wave of 4.6 billion years of conscious evolution. And my invitation to you, David, is to rest in the knowing of that and let that inform you about, because you are a leader, let that inform how you choose to move forward. And I almost use the word pray, but I invite you to think of the future generations when we make decisions today.
Totally. Yay. In closing, how do people find you? I know we've talked about it earlier, but how will somebody engage with you, both through the centre and your own work?
Yeah, well, we live in the world of the internet, and, you know, that's the best way. So that look, I mean, it's a humble affair. You know, the Charitable Trust, we have three elders and myself, and we're kind of growing into the world in a way that feels real. We're not trying to push. We're not trying to grow faster than we are. So we have that internet presence at the Center for the Great Turning.org. I'm friends with the Rites of Passage Foundation. That's where I've done a lot of this voluntary work and the work they do with their adolescents. We're based in the top of the South, I'm proud to say, you know, this beautiful place where so much good work is happening.
Thank you very much for your time, Jamie. It was an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and your patience and your passion.
and I hope all goes well with all things of the centre of the Great Turning. So during that interview, at the end, the bus was incredibly hot that I was recording in. This is our home, and both cameras overheated and shut down, hence the interview ending quite abruptly. Apologies for that. Jamie has sent me a beautiful piece of piano music to play, and I'll share that with you now. It's by an artist called SYML, and the piece of music is Girl Piano. I think it's beautiful. I'd not heard of the artist, but it's well worth a listen. Thank you very much.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.